This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. If you want to be part of this fine production, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess P.S. on the board and jazzed as hell, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, thanks for coming around, man. Always good to see you.
Dom, once again, a delight and an honor in America to be on your broadcast this afternoon.
You are always so gracious, my friend. We haven't spoke since.
We haven't.
Since the election came in. I just want to get a sense, man, personally, how you feeling, Jim?
The answer is, of course, like many other people, I was surprised. I truly thought that this was going to go in a direction of people doing critical thinking across the political aisle and making an assessment in the end that putting policy to one side, we need to be concerned about the future of America. And I saw so much of that, frankly, Democrats, Republicans alike. It plainly was not where America was at the time, and presumably still not is not. And so that is a surprise to me. Beyond that, I think about the changes that are coming come 72 days from now in January, a change in government, not just in terms of policies, but as we can talk at great length, a change in the way that government works, the powerful executive branch that we are going to see by virtue of what the Supreme Court has done, by virtue of what Donald Trump has promised he will do, by virtue of some of the authorities in the Constitution, and by virtue of, again, the notion that these prosecutions, which I suspect we'll talk about this afternoon, are probably not going to be going ahead. All of that suggests to me that we are going to have, if not an imperial presidency, a powerful presidency of the sort that we have not seen in 248 years.
Did you say you expected critical thinking, Jim?
Well, I did. I was hoping, I was hoping, Dom,
well,
that would happen.
What would you think then? I mean, I get it. From a a policy perspective or a marketing, whatever the case is, resonating with the voters. I mean, this wasn't really close. She didn't win anything above and beyond what Bud Biden did. She performed well.
Right.
Turnout wasn't what we thought it was going to be. So lots of issues there, and a couple of things as well. One, I want to get your sense of the policies. Bernie Sanders, senator from Vermont, just won his reelection. Mm-hmm. Came down pretty hard on the Democratic Party, saying, big surprise, you walked away from white working class voters, and now you lost black and Latino working class voters. Bernie's always been very consistent on that the economic message, talking about the billionaires and all that. Do you think there was an opportunity missed to address those specific issues, highlight those things more? It was a tough go for Kamala. Joe got out late,
right.
And she had to
limited
move.
Period of time for her to advocate on behalf of her policies. And again, it's easy to say this 2020, right?
Yes.
2020 hindsight, 48 hours afterwards. But there are more than few signs along the way that economies and pocketbooks were important to Americans.
Yeah.
And for an awful lot of people, that is appropriately where they live, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to keep our kids in school. We want to make certain we've got good homes, we've got transportation, we've got good food. That's all about money. It's all about income. And when we talk about prices, even though, again, some of the specific figures about inflation not being where it was before, that's the critical thinking I was concerned about. The people say, okay, prices have gone down in some areas. And inflation, we do not have those problems that we had of a dramatic nature even a few years ago. Still, that was the issue that plainly—
But they're still high. I mean, the inflation
high,
that
right?
happened before,
right.
those high percentages— While the continued increase has gone down,
right.
they continue to go up from a higher number. So,
exactly, right.
We're stuck with that.
Absolutely. And so prices are out there undeniably. And that's a part of this. And that's the part that I think again, I'm not a pollster, but someone should have identified that as, across the board, an interest in all of the constituencies that might otherwise vote for Democrats, plainly voting with their pocketbook, and at least hearing a message from the Trump campaign about that issue, that prices are too high.
And placing the blame on the current administration specifically, which is hard to... You know, and you compare it to worldwide inflation, if you look at a, you know, a macroeconomic standpoint, but, you know, that doesn't help when the price of bread and butter is going up and it's not really being addressed to the degree that Trump and his team addressed it. As Steve from Milwaukee notes, she supported the union. She talked about price gouging. She talked about tax credits for homeowners. But she didn't, you know, she was in the administration and inflation, and that was not specifically addressed. Some of these other ancillary issues, yes. But that didn't address the specific concern of some of those folks that went with their pocket.
Right. And I think to the good point that your caller, listener is making, what she needed to do was take Joe Biden at his word and say, Kamala, go out there and separate yourself if you need to from what we have done and announce some major macroeconomic policy that basically is not a huge departure in terms of the line, but the line going higher in terms of what the administration can and should do. And make that the core of your campaign. And implicitly, yes, indeed, suggesting that Joe Biden didn't get it and that he didn't do what we should have been doing, promising that I will come in and I've got this major new program that will rescue us going forward. That's what wasn't done.
Folks, that's James Santel, former U.S. attorney on the Dom Salvia Show. We'll get to your calls and your text today as well, 855-752-4842. And we're going to dive into all sorts of things. We got a couple hours, Jim. So let's. I want to throw out some of the headlines that I saw specifically today. One of the bright lights, Tammy Baldwin.
Yes.
She pulled it out. She had a victory speech today. Just a couple of the quotes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Baldwin recounted the campaign visit to all corners of Wisconsin in her victory speech at Steamfitters Local 601 in Madison. Here's what she said. I listen to people. I really listen to people and then deliver for them. And in turn, these Wisconsinites showed up for me. Now, this is a very, very close race, and we'll have some Hovde news on this in a moment as well. She goes on to say, Senator Baldwin from Wisconsin, the people of Wisconsin chose Donald Trump, and I respect their choice. I will always fight for Wisconsin, and that means working with President Trump to do that and standing up to him when he doesn't have our best interests at heart. Tammy Baldwin, gracious in her speech today, I respect their choice. Oh, I've struggled with that, Jim, because obviously the right to vote, our exercising our constitutional rights, as it were. I acknowledge their choice, Jim. I recognize their choice. And
maybe even some of the motivations for that choice.
Sure, and
right?
I accept the choice. I don't respect the choice.
Yes, yeah.
So my challenge is, and so some of the conversations I've been having with folks very close to me, you know, how do we manage our angst of how the can you go out there and vote for the rapist/racist? You know what I'm saying? And then expect that your daughters will be fine. You know, I mean, it's hard to balance those things, Jim. And I'm just wondering what your thought is on, because we have a couple of things to deal with here. One is our interpersonal relationships and how we manage this loss. And of course, you know, this is down the middle, what, 67 million to 72 million or something like that. I mean, a solid victory for Trump. And for the mega movement, but there's still a lot of people that didn't vote that way. So in every family, lots of families, there's going to be the challenge. And Thanksgiving is just a couple of weeks away, Jim.
It's not just your crazy uncle at the end of the table who's going to be pontificating about things, right?
No,
right?
Now it's your uncle and your cousin and your in-laws. And all of a sudden, and now. So what's your thought on that? I mean, just on a personal level, before we get into like the politics and what the DNC did, how would you think it's best to manage those kinds of disappointments?
Right. And let's talk again about Tammy's comments here. I'd like to think that what she is saying is we respect the system, which is what you just said, Dom, right? We respect a process that calls upon everybody to take in the information that is out there, hopefully. Maybe do some critical thinking if you can think about it. I respect a system that produces a result and that reflects the people of America. That is what we've got. And I think that's what you're saying. That's what I'm saying as well. The challenge, again, is with America. And we were talking about this, even if it had gone in the opposite direction. You and I talked about this. If Kamala was the president-elect right now, we would still say, you know what? We have got a 51%, 49% divide in this country. We would still have an issue that is the same as the one we've got right now, which has to do with, again, reaching across that divide, if you will. Talk about something that is perhaps best put on a pillow on your couch.
Oh, and rub their nose in it,
right,
Jim.
Right,
that's what we do.
Right. We would still have that issue. And so I think that's the great challenge for America. It may not be one that Donald Trump has on his agenda, but for people like you and me and others who are communicating in the public domain, it is to address what and to take up what Tammy has said. How do we do some communicating and show in a respectful manner? And this is what she's talking about. I respect the process here. Identify what have to be identified in the end as these wild inconsistencies, right? The things that he is going to be sentenced, presumably, as a fraudster in about 3 weeks here. This is a man who is now in charge. At
fraudster,
least in,
you mean like lying for money?
Exactly, right? Right.
And that's the guy, right? And you're going to bring this guy in, a guy who has a history of lying to you and think he's going to somehow fulfill his political campaign promises. A known liar and fraudster. I mean, that's a big, big lift. And while, again, I appreciate those that don't think like me, that don't vote like me, but I said before, man, I'm going to be louder if this thing happens. I will have respectful conversation, but if you tell me that there's going to be a 50% tariff on product XYZ coming in,
right,
and that somehow that's going to lower costs for me, or that's somehow going to fund child care in this country, great. Show me how that works.
Right. And it's because Donald Trump has a gut feeling that that's the way that that's got to be. That's not an economist talking. That's someone who has engaged in fraud throughout his career and is going to be sentenced for that in a criminal manner. But it goes back to his bankruptcies, all of the financial things that have been disastrous for him. And I think the point is just this. Can we find a way for everybody to acknowledge that this is not a man who's an economist? This is not a man who has been a banker, a financier. Even if we can agree that some policies may or may not be appropriate, we can argue about that. But we've got to be able to understand some of the history of this man and of our nation, too.
Well, we'd like to think so, but that would require critical thinking,
right?
Who's got time for that? Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. We're going to want your input today as well. We have some sound to get to. We're going to dive into the various legal cases against Donald Trump, speculate what may or may not happen in those cases, and again, get to your calls as well, 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Look who's back again. James Santel joining me in studio. Jess P.S. on the board getting your calls. Be patient. We will get to you. talked about Tammy Baldwin and her concession. I'm sorry, her victory speech.
Victory speech.
I'm sorry, she's right, saying concession right, speech.
Right. John Tester, Sherrod Brown, not so much, but Tammy Baldwin. Yes,
Tammy
back
Baldwin.
To the
we'll
Senate for
Tammy.
Another 6 years.
And we had some victory on the state level here as well, not to be overlooked, but definitely a recognizable bad day for the Democrats in this country. Briefly here, Eric Hovde, according to the Raw story, one of my favorites, he is refusing to concede his loss to Baldwin, blaming a third-party candidate for siphoning enough votes he needed to win. America First candidate Thomas Ledger, L-E-A-G-E-R, netted almost the exact vote total as the Hovden loss margin, and the Republican accused Democrats of propping up the former gun rights lobbyist long shot campaign. Here's a quote. "We're certainly disappointed that the Democrats' effort to siphon off votes with a fraudulent candidate had a significant impact on the race, with those votes making up more than the entire margin of the race right now. We will continue to monitor returns and make sure that every vote is counted." Hovde said, "It's unfortunate. If the Democrats wouldn't have put in a plant, this probably would have been called some time ago. But you know what? It is what it is." Democrats responded, a Democratic strategist, "That's absurd. There are a million reasons why Wisconsinites didn't vote for Hovde. Hovde should stop being a whiny baby, admit he lost the election. Democrats didn't recruit a man who tried to kidnap Governor Whitmer." Apparently this Ledger guy was involved, or claimed he was. Eric Hovde, although down, still not conceding and blaming the third party candidate.
Blaming the Democratic process, people coming forward, whatever the merits of their candidacy, and saying, "Because of that, I lost. That for that reason, the people of Wisconsin did not send me to the Senate." I think about it in context of, and I think he may have also said something about filing some complaints and making this more official, that sort of thing. The judicial process, even with the Wisconsin Election Commission, name your entity out there that can sometimes resolve things. If you've truly engaged in actions that are illegal, can you get fined? You bet you can. And that has happened from time to time. This is not that. And this is not, to use the word, we don't adjudicate this kind of political disappointment inside courts, inside the agencies that monitor our elections. And I think more than anything else, it's just a nice attempt to say, "Well, gee, I would have won, but for this other bad behavior," which again is part of the process here, and just needs to acknowledge. Should be gracious. Take a page, not that he would, from Kamala Harris at Howard University, and standing up and saying, "I called my opponent and I congratulated him. I promise to continue the fight that animated this campaign." You can talk about that. You can talk about economics and talk about things are important to the state of Wisconsin, but be gracious about it, and maybe even live for another day if you want to, right? Not Eric Hovde, and that's it. It is just that. It's political grandstanding, not going anywhere.
All right, so there's the update on the Wisconsin Senate race. We're talking to James Santel. We talked a little bit about the personal part of how to deal with this, and all our mega friends and whatnot. What about the party thing? You know, there's been a lot of articles. Everyone's pointing fingers, looking around. Right, what do we do? Right. What could be done differently? You know, and it's one thing to vote for a Democrat. It's a whole another thing to be involved in the party apparatus. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So what was there any takeaway for you on what the party did? Were they too elitist? Did they spend too much money in the wrong way? Was the messaging not right? What's your just general sense of how the party performed? What happens to the DNC now?
Right, exactly. Again, got to go back and do some soul searching, as everyone says, right? And I think we've touched on some of that already, Dom, which is just, all right, Americans in the early part of the 21st century are still concerned about bread and butter issues. And so got to focus on some of that economic piece. We're going to have a midterm election. Again, in 2 years, it's going to happen again, right? We're in a couple of years here. We'll see where the world is at that time. That's got to be a part of the analysis. Beyond that, as many people have said, it is also about the charge of elitism. It's also got to be a part of how we speak about things. And I will tell you that I'm sometimes guilty of this as well. I will sometimes self-identify saying this is a really wonky issue. I think they're important things, and I'd like to think they are not. They are not beyond the capacity of Americans to understand. But maybe we need to make the message very, very simple. And that's not to say that Americans are unable to understand anything that's not simple, but just that messaging for people who have so many other things in their lives.
I know,
right?
But here's the thing. Maybe the nice messaging that we're doing isn't striking through because it's too nice. It's all, you know, it's all superficial. You know, the other side won by not being nice, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the vitriol and all the trans.
The language, the name calling.
Come on,
right?
Man, are you kidding me? You're a communist. You're an antichrist. You know, you're garbage. You're this, you're that. I mean, oh, congratulations, Mr. Trump. You win again.
Right.
So it's hard for me to say, oh, yeah, we should really focus on how we say these things. Mm-hmm. When that's not what they did. They struck through. It may be despite... Maybe we can't do a causation correlation, because if the issues were so specific, if it really was just the inflation, if it really was that, then all that doesn't matter.
Right,
so then
right.
if all that doesn't matter, it doesn't matter if we're nice or we're not nice.
Right,
or
how the message is conveyed should fall away, right?
Right,
exactly.
And,
right.
Not to say that we need to walk away from civility and how we are, but damn, Joe, right. I'm not going to – you want me to be nice and after the crap all those people just said – about all and what's going to come down? I mean, I'll respect your ability to go vote and appreciate the process, but I may not necessarily respect your decisions. Last 60 seconds, Jim.
Right. And again, I think at the end of the campaign, Kamala began to do some of this, right?
Yeah.
There was a lot of not only the fascist word being bandied about, it may have been a bit too late. She was not doing the name calling, and that's a part of the process. We are the party of nice, right? There's no doubt about it. You can be diplomatic and you can be sensitive to the humanity and approach people by being strong at the same time and pushing back vibrantly with your adjectives and your adverbs and your nouns as well, right?
Come
right?
on, man. Right? It's like Roadhouse around here. Right. You're the bouncers. I am the cooler. It says you'd be nice until I tell you it's time to not be nice. And I'm thinking right now, maybe not be so nice. But we appreciate everyone's opinion here. 855-752-4842. Going to go to the lines. They're stacked up. You're next.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. At the table with James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Jess P.S. is on the board, and you folks, you're getting fired up and calling in, so let's clear some of you folks off. Kurt from Madison, you are first today. Happy days, Kurt. What do you got for us?
Hey, so James, this is directed solely at you, no offense. But, you know, given that your experience in law and in the judicial system, in my opinion, all this artifact of post-analysis of the election, what she did right, what she did wrong, my argument is this. I always believe in root cause analysis, and Biden dropped the ball. He should have fired Garland. That is where this problem started. Trump would have never gotten to where he was. And that failure has led us to this point in time. What say you?
Kurt, I agree with you. I agree with you. Here's the history that both you and I, Dom, all the other listeners know. When Donald Trump was on the ellipse and making that speech, those pictures that are now emblazoned in our history, he was calling for a violent result, right? And frankly, maybe not that hour, maybe not that day, but at some point, somebody at the Department of Justice should have said, you know what, we need to open a file, which you've got a basis upon which to do. And instead, what happened, Kurt, to your good point, is we waited a year, we meaning the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland, and woke up one day and saw what the House Select Committee was doing. And saying, oh, my gosh, there are people who are testifying about things going on in the White House, right? That while this was happening, this wasn't just a mob. These were people who were being coordinated, a number of folks. There was a conspiracy going on. And a year later, they began to open a file and begin an investigation in a grand jury, right? And many of those people come forward, not everybody, but they then pursued the investigation that resulted in, ultimately, the indictment a year after. And so I agree with you. I think one of the historical deficits of Merrick Garland's time as our attorney general is doing this sort of thing where you say, well, let's go up the chain. Let's work on the lower people and get up to the higher people. No, you got evidence from the start. You've got people at the very top level, and you open the file as to them, and you begin to call people in to testify what was going on in the White House at that time, before, during, and after. I agree with you. And I think it's going to be a historical blot, not only on this administration, but on the capacity and the appropriateness of federal prosecutors, state prosecutors as well, doing things in a timely fashion and ensuring that justice is done in a way that meets the crime that we can see in front of our own eyes.
Were they intimidated because he was a former president?
I suspect so.
And because he's rich and has powerful friends.
You know, and this goes back to the other things that you and I have talked about, Dom. You remember I've been critical of him for being somewhat special counsel happy, right? And talking about how, no, the Department of Justice can do that. Merrick Garland came in and he was so much worried, I would say, about the reputation of the department. You should be focused upon that.
But, reputation but of the department after Bill Barr?
Right, right. And the point is, let's go back to the norms. We don't need to recoil and not be aggressive because you're concerned about how America is going to respond. You do the aggressive things that are part of your commission. That's the big that's the big criticism.
Well, James Santel, good news for you. I'm sure Trump's DOJ would be very aggressive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You think whatever they do, they're going to be sitting on their hands like Garland did?
Absolutely not. And here's the other piece of it. Again, putting together all of this, we talked already about the power that Donald Trump will have. We will hear in the next few weeks, of course, about who his nominee is for attorney general, associate attorney general, deputy, assistant attorneys general, maybe United States attorneys. There are 92 of them to appoint around the country. All these appointments. And we know now, because the Senate, you do not need 60 votes there. All of those folks can be loyalists. They can be approved by the Senate overnight, and they can do what you want inside the Department of Justice. And marching orders from the White House, erasing what we've talked about, that traditional arm's length, that's gone.
Oh,
that's
hell gone. Yeah, it's gone, baby.
Right, right. And that's one of the great fears of what's going to happen. That's the power consolidation I'm talking about. It applies, again, from my perspective, with great import to the Department of Justice, but it's true of every other agency out there. Labor, Commerce, State Department. You've got now basically a blank check to write when it comes to these appointments. If you had a divided Senate or a Senate, again, that was principally Democratic, they would be able to temper some of that. Now you can get these folks done immediately, and they can be the loyalists with a capital L.
And Trump will say he has a mandate, and right. He will do it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in some ways, okay. I look forward to paradise, right. Mega. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what that looks like. 855-752-4842. Dick from Madison, you're next. Welcome, Dick. What do you got?
Well, we made history this week, guys. Now we have a felon-elect. For the first time in our history. But to James, I'd like to ask him this question. If we would have had a attorney general as proactive as the scum that we were just talking about, William Barr, and I firmly believe that if William Barr had not been his attorney general, he wouldn't have made it through the impeachments, because he so skewed what was in the Mueller report. I mean, come on. When you get half of it or less to read, it's kind of hard to put anything together. And he took that, as I remember Barr, he took it over about a 5-6 day period, wouldn't release it, and stripped it down to something it totally wasn't, and then handed it back and said, Oh, now do a book report on it.
Right. And remember very much, Dick, that he issued that letter in which he said, nothing to see here, people, right? A very simple letter. And then, days later, released this very much redacted version. It destroyed all the toner in all of our machines, right, as the black portions of it came out of our printers. And at that point, again, the messaging to the American public was done. And again, in the wake of that, you do get the impeachment. Actually, on that issue, here's the other criticism that I'll pursue. There is a situation where Nancy Pelosi, who I admire greatly, in the wake of that report, this is basically Bob Mueller saying, I can't indict, I can't prosecute because of all sorts of internal Department of Justice policy. But here, Madam Speaker, is your blueprint. Here's the way you go about impeaching him. And Nancy Pelosi, again, remember, Donald Trump was not impeached for the Russian interference. More importantly, was not impeached for the obstruction of justice. That was the major portion of that report. And Nancy Pelosi, who I admire and is a wonderful American and all sorts of reasons, said the American people are not prepared for an impeachment of a president. That was very early on. And then we impeached him twice over for other things significant. Maybe the Ukraine thing was not quite as significant. January 6th matter, hugely significant. But the question there, once again, to your good point, Dick, is deterrence, right? If the Democrats had said, you know what, I've got this roadmap that says this is how we need to attack this presidency and remove him because he's engaged in obstruction of justice in March of 2017, the Democrats did nothing and instead waited. And that sends a message to Donald Trump that, you know what, I can do more because the Democrats in Congress, other places, are not going to respond.
There's no lesson learned with Trump. He can do more and more and more and more. There are going to be no guardrails. Well, we'll get to that. Jeannie, I know you got a question regarding that. Welcome to the show. Jeannie, what do you got?
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. It's a great show. I hope people listen on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
Thanks, Jeannie.
Outstanding. What does the state say for the rule of law, for going to school to get your legal degree so you can be an attorney? What does this say for the average citizen? This just bothers me like nobody's business because I always follow the rule of law and pay attention to it. And this guy is going to be president, taking oath of office, which he violated. What can be done? I mean, this is alarming to me that this guy is going to be in charge of our country, that stole documents from Mar-a-Lago. What in the world is going on? What does that say about law in our country? That bothers me so bad, I just can't tell you. Can you help me with this, understand, or what I can do as a citizen? Thank you very much, guys, for taking my call.
And, Jeannie, I embrace and I am with you on your outrage. There's a little bit that's going on out there. Of course, many of the lawyers who surrounded Donald Trump are getting disbarred, including Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman, many others out there in trouble. Some of them are still in criminal trouble out there, right? And so that may happen down the road. But your point is the larger one, which is about the obligation of a president who takes an oath of office. There's that take care clause in the Constitution, which is my favorite, actually, is to take care, yes, that the laws be faithfully executed, but also taking care of the people of the United States of America. We elected this man who has exhibited, frankly, a contempt for that kind of thing, a contempt for the rule of law, and has in his first term and promised now in his second term to put people in these positions, not just in the Department of Justice, but that's where the rule of law comes from, who are going to be pursuing political, partisan policies that are not premised upon the rule of law. We will see. I will be most pleasantly surprised if indeed we get some balance here. Dom, I suspect, will tell me, anticipate being surprised, Jim, not being surprised by that. But the reality is, Gene, that I share your concern about the future. And the notion that the rule of law, the administration of justice, may well be compromised here in the coming months is not just a rhetorical question. It is probably a specter just waiting to happen.
It's a continuation of the rule of law getting compromised by inaction or lack of meaningful action by Garland and the circumstances that you pointed out with impeachment and so on. And so the rule, kids, here's the rule. If you want to go out and break all the laws that there are and do whatever the hell you want and grab them by the and take people's money for fraudulent activity, just make sure you can get away with it as long as you become the president of the United States. So shoot big. I mean, shoot for the stars. You hit the moon, Jim.
Right. Exactly. And you will also, to Gene's point, you'll get enough lawyers who will surround themselves with arguments and promote that. Go into all the courts. You have a take no hostages approach when it comes to all these cases. You file motions repeatedly that have been denied.
Oh, you got to have money to go to. You got to have money. Kids, don't do that unless you have a lot of money, or you got like a billionaire sugar daddy
who will support you, you can engage in enough fraud to suggest to people that you've got the money to pay them off, which is also part of the problem. But that is the larger point as we take our tongues out of our cheek, right, Dom? What is the message that we are sending to the generations that are coming up here about the presidency? We'd always talk when I was growing up about you too can be the president of the United States of America. That was a positive thing. That was a thing that people could aspire to. Anybody could do that. We were not talking about acquiring the presidency by virtue, again, of name calling, of engaging in fraudulent activity, of becoming a criminal, of saying these things about anybody who's not you, demeaning women, demeaning people of color, demeaning the LGBTQ community, all those kinds of things. That was never the message.
Adjudicated for rape?
Exactly.
You know, we had a caller yesterday who was an unfortunate victim of rape, and she brought up the point, you know, you got to see this guy on the screen all the time. That's what you're voting for, the racist rapist. And I struggle to, like, when you talk to somebody who voted for him, and, it's just the economics and you know, inflation was too high. Okay, but are you digging beyond, you know, the prices? Are you looking into why did that happen? Right. What are the circumstances? Was it a specific policy of Kamala Harris and the Biden administration? Was it because of the laws, some bipartisan passed, some not?
Right. We had this thing called COVID that changed America forever, probably.
We had a worldwide pandemic. We had supply chain issues. By the way, nothing like a tragedy or an emergency to make a little more money. I mean, the market's doing great, man. The Dow's up. They're making a ton of money. Why do you think that is? Why are there record profits for, like, you know, food companies?
Right. Why did the stock market begin to jump, candidly, on news that Donald Trump is going to be our next president? Because it's those big corporations that, again, are excited about the possibility of more tax cuts that do not benefit.
Don't forget, deregulation, baby.
Exactly.
This is the Dom Salvi Show. Going to go back to the lines, 855-752-4842, 855-757-CIVIC. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, at the table with me. Jess P.S. on the horn and on the calls. You can join us, 855-75-CIVIC. We got some people lining up. Let's get to them. Dan from Green Bay, you are up. Welcome, Dan. What do you got for us?
Hey, I'm curious as to why you're pushing the January 6th agenda and well, not obvious. Can I finish, please?
Well, sure. I don't know what a January 6th agenda is.
Well, your agenda is obviously pushing a false flag, but.
Hang on one second, Dan. I'm going to stop you right there. No, hang on. No, you cannot. I'm going to address that right now. And if you got something else to say after I talk, then you can do it. That's how it goes. So let me ask you something. Were people convicted of seditious conspiracy in the January 6th assault on the Capitol, yes or no?
I'm sorry. I got a beep on my phone, so please.
My question, once again, were people convicted of seditious conspiracy and other charges related to the attack on the Capitol, yes or no?
Yeah, they were.
Yes, okay. Yeah, and so do you know whether or not any of those people were in contact with the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, the Trump, you know, inner circle? Do you know if they were in communication and had coordination with that? Do you know that, Dan, or not?
Yeah. So you're not going to let me finish my question.
No, I'm asking you a question. Now you can go after you answer my question. Do we know if the Trump campaign or his administration or his inner circle or his kids or anybody around him were in touch with the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers? You know, do we know that, Dan?
No, actually, we don't.
Okay, don't you think that's something we should know? If those people were convicted of seditious conspiracy, those folks who they communicated with should also probably be at least inquired into or investigated. Don't you think so, Dan?
I have no problem with that.
Okay, now you go.
Can I bring along another point?
Sure.
Or no? Okay, so you literally had Kamala Harris encouraging people in quote-unquote, quote unquote, what did they call it? You know, they were attacking and destroying neighborhoods. Okay.
What? I'm sorry. No, I don't know what you're talking about. You got to be more specific, Dan.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, dude, tell me what you're talking about. What did Kamala Harris did not attack any buildings, dude? What are you saying?
She didn't. Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
But
and
she encouraged it.
In what way? Encouraged attack upon the cities of America?
But by saying these are, you know, quote unquote, you know, people with, you know, no bad intentions. They destroyed neighborhoods. They destroyed neighborhoods in major cities.
Are you talking about the Black Lives Matter protesters after the no, you cannot finish, Dan. I'm getting clarity here, but now you're just being an ass, so you're gone. If you're talking about the Floyd riots, most of those, statistically speaking, were not violent. And yes, when they got violent, people got arrested and went to jail, dude. And so, no, people have the right to protest. And when young black men, unarmed black men, are getting killed by police in statistically significant manner, people have the right to stand up and protest. And sometimes those protests go south. And when that happens and laws get broken, then consequences must be vetted out, man. But that doesn't mean because Harris may have suggested or anybody suggests that someone has a right to protest, which they do, at least until maybe you get in, Dan, or your guy, Donald Trump will, you know, bring out the National Guard against them. Remember, he just wanted to shoot him in the legs, dude. No, man, come on. That's a bunch of baloney. But thanks for playing 855-752-4842. Jim, any comments on that?
Kamala Harris has never, ever advocated at any time when she was a DA in California, Attorney General in California, United States Senator, Vice President of the United States of America, candidate for the chief executive position, challenge anybody to identify any time when that woman, who is in law enforcement from beginning to end, has advocated for violence in our municipalities, our towns, our villages. Simply a wrong premise. And the caller was not able to identify, of course, any statement that she made. And so that's the problem. And that's the critical thinking I was talking about before. You can't find a fact upon which to argue, then we're going to be dismissing you.
Well, and that's, you know, facts do matter. And if it were to be the case that Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or anybody else was out there specifically advocating for violence, I would object to that, as most people should.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering, though, Dan from Green Bay, when Trump's out there saying we need to have just one night of purge. You know, just let's purge. Let's, you know, bet the cops get really, really mean with everybody. And we'll stop all the crime immediately. You know, maybe just go out and start shooting all the drug dealers in the street. Right. Is that a great idea, Dan? Because your guys recommended something like that. The guy you voted for. So don't tell me what you think Harris may have done. You voted for a guy that's supporting the purge, dude. Check yourself. 855-752-4842. I'm trying to be nice and respectful.
And this and again, the notion somehow that that we've got a candidate in Kamala Harris who is doing any of that is truly absurd. It is just appropriately dismissed, and that conversation not productive.
But Dan, thanks for calling, man. 855-752-4842. You can do it again tomorrow. James Santel at the desk with me. Jess Piez on the board, on the horn. You coming in back with us. I know we've got a lot of folks on the line. Stick around through the break. We will get to you. We promise we're going to dive into the court cases, or what's left of them now that Trump is the president-elect, and some Joe Biden sound from today. Stick around.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.